This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
I'm sick with this, I'm sick with this. Since you went to the bottom, I just missed. My own sweet time, did it teach what I found? I didn't recognize you for this anymore. I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I'm your host, as always, Shane Told. So good to have you on this fine Tuesday. We have a great episode. Whitney Payton is here. She is super rad. So happy to have her. Thank you to her for taking the time. If you're not familiar with Whitney Payton, get familiar. She is awesome. She's making incredible music, combining hip-hop and rock and punk and emo and all this different stuff. She's collaborating with all these different artists from all different walks of life. So cool, and I'm so happy she could come on and share her story of how she got thrown into this whole crazy thing. Before we get into that, thank you everybody who listened last week to Bradley from Amorosa. He's a good dude, and he's dope, and it was great to have him. Thank you, Bradley, for doing it last week. As always, if you want to get in touch with me, it's super easy. You can email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read all my emails. I try to write back to everybody. I'm not the best at it, but I do read them all, so please hit me up on there. Also, I want to remind you guys to like our Facebook page. It's under new management, so to speak, which means I'm not really running it. I've got some very awesome people running it. Shout out to Neil, Julia, and Melissa for killing it on there. We're doing Meme Mondays. We're doing Throwback Thursdays. We're having great discussions on there. So please check it out. Get on Facebook, search for Lead Singer Syndrome, and like that shit. We're also on Instagram and Twitter. I also check those pretty much all day long. And if you're not so happy, we have the hate line. 657-666-HATE, H-A-T-E. Give me a call, leave me a message, a voicemail, if you will, and let me have it. Let me know if you're not so happy with this week's episode with Whitney, last week's episode with Bradley, real mature Bradley, or whatever else you're not so happy with. So again, the number is 657-666-HATE. As always, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Rockabilia.com, the best place on the internet to get band merch. They have over 500,000 unique items you're not going to get anywhere else. Very, very cool stuff. I believe they're sending me some stuff this week. I'm very excited. I think I asked for a Morrissey shirt, a Misfits shirt, something from Bad Religion, I think. You know, some of my favorite bands. They've got so much awesome stuff. So go over to Rockabilia.com and check it out. 500,000 items. That's a lot. You only have to buy one or two, but they have 500,000. And if you use this promo code, you're going to save 15% off your entire order. The promo code is PCJabberJaw. J-A-B-B-E-R-J-A-W. So head over there, PCJabberJaw, and save 15% off anything you want at rockabilia.com. I want to take a quick second to thank all the members of the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. You know who you are. We're up to 261 of you fine folks that help me keep the lights on around here, help me keep the show going week after week with great guests, great conversations. Thank you so much. If anyone who's not a member wants to check it out, for as little as $6, you get bonus episodes, merchandise shipped to your house, merchandise you can purchase, which is only available for Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club members. We have a great Facebook group with so much great discussions. I do a monthly Q&A session. Sometimes I play some tunes. It really is a good vibe. And it, again, like I said, it's only $6 a month to start. So check it out. It is leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess, and that'll get you in. So do me a favor, have a look at that. And it really is just the price of one gourmet cup of coffee. And if you're like me, I don't even drink coffee anymore. I cut that shit out. So maybe you got to stop drinking coffee and sign up for the All Access Club. That's what I'm telling you to do. Check it out, leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. Anyway, let's jump in to this week's episode and my conversation with Whitney Payton.
I'm just a ghost now, just a ghost now. My home is lonely and it's looking like a ghost town. I don't feel like this is real life. Gotta tell me straight, what's the deal? I never knew what commitment meant. Now I'm here trying to fix this mess. Every night I close my eyes and I pretend that you're in this bed. You swear to God that I'm unfaithful. I swear to God that I am. That's a lot of swearing, that's why I'm cursed. But I deserve it because back before you I wasn't a perfect person, and I can see why you would think I do you dirty.
Hey Whitney, how are you?
Good, how's it going?
I'm pretty well.
Good, awesome.
We've been trying to do this for like a week.
Yeah, but you were sick last time, right?
I was sick, and then I heard you got in a van wreck.
Oh my God, so many things have happened this tour. It was crazy. Yeah, I was sick too, though. Like, I'm just getting my voice back as well, so it's almost good. Like, I was on all these steroids for my vocal cords.
Oh, really?
And you were sick, and I'm like, this is, like, going around or something. And then, yeah, and then the whole tour rig had to be replaced.
The whole thing.
Yeah, well, we were actually able to fix the trailer, but we had to do that as well. But I had just purchased a 2018 SUV, and it's gone.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but it's okay. We're not gone, so that's good.
Hopefully there's some insurance or something can get figured out.
There is.
I know that stuff can all be weird, you know, like, because it's like, well, are you using it for business purposes? Does it say that on the insurance form? Like, it can be scary, and a lot of people don't realize, like, how
also,
scary.
I wasn't driving. So, I mean, but I do have other drivers covered because I obviously know that I tour, but it's in Memphis too. Like, my car's in Memphis.
Oh, yeah. That's not convenient.
Yeah. So it's like all those factors. It's like I do have insurance, but the added cost for other things is definitely up there because you still have to, you know, when it gets towed, pay to get it out or pay for the trailer wasn't cheap either to get all that fixed. So you know how it is.
Well, at least we're talking about that and not talking about like how last week someone in your band is fucking dead. Do you know what I mean? Like
exactly.
You have to look on the bright side with this. And I feel like that's you. I feel like you're kind of a positive person despite some of your lyrics and subject matter getting pretty dark at times.
Yeah.
Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I would say there's a good balance. You know what I mean? I would say there's a balance of there's certain songs that are definitely darker and like storytelling songs or relationship songs that are darker. But then there are some just fun, just silly songs on the flip side of that. You know what I mean? That I think kind of balances it out. And also people say they listen to darker songs and it makes them feel better. So
yeah,
it's as long as the overall like reaction is positive and it comes out positive and it's not like telling people to do bad things or whatever. I'm cool with that. I think
it's so weird though. You know, like you bridge this gap between, you know, hip hop and like, I don't know if you want to call it punk rock or like what, you know, just the scene genre, like, you know, kind of the typical bands that I talk to on this show, and you do kind of a great job of it. But I always wonder when I talk to artists like this, is it hard to kind of try to fit into, you know, both genres at the same time? It's kind of that whole round hole, you know, square peg, whatever the analogy is. Like that must be so difficult for you trying to figure out kind of where you're going when you're working on music.
It is. I mean, already from my image, it's different. I mean, you hear rapper and then you see my image and it's just like they already don't know what to do with me because of that. And then you hear like several different genres on one album. It's definitely confusing, but I would rather it be like a roller coaster of emotions and everything than one thing the whole way through. I don't want you to listen to an album and you feel like you're listening to the same song over and over. So I'd prefer that, even though it is harder to place because people just want you to be one thing and a really recognizable gimmick and they know exactly what you are and what your next song's going to sound like. And, you know, I just can't kind of conform to doing one sound.
No. I'm the same way with music that I make too. And I think that it would be boring, you know, to kind of just try to do the same thing every time. It's like, you know, you bring up, I think you said it a couple times, you know, talking about like emotion and talking about, you know, how you write a song that has, you know, sorry to sound like a like a millennial, but like, you know, it hits them in the feels. You know what I mean? Like that isn't something that is classically like a part of hip hop. You know what I mean? Like old school hip hop is kind of more like either about partying, you know, or getting fucked up or like violence. Do you know what I mean?
I think the storytelling thing is very like Eminem. If you look at Eminem's earlier work, I think that storytelling is definitely it. But as far as emotional and relationships, you're right, because there is this whole thing in hip hop that you got to be hard and that you got to be, you know, lack emotion when it comes to relationships and whatnot. But I'm not from the ghetto and I'm not hard. And I'm not trying to give off the impression that I'm gangster rap or anything like that. Right. So it's really weird because I'm delving into rap and hip hop, but still maintaining what I know. Like I'm only putting in my lyrics what I know and have experienced. So it kind of brings a different element. So because as hip hop has expanded outside of just gangster rap and being hard, it kind of, you know, this is what it's kind of becoming and turning into. It's definitely multiple genres of hip hop. I mean, we have the mumble rap and trap rap. And,
Oh yeah. And I don't claim to be well versed in this at all, by the way. You know what
it's
I mean?
Like rock.
I,
it's just like rock. There's multiple genres of rock.
Oh, so absolutely. Absolutely. I don't claim to be an expert on that either, to be honest with you. But, I know you're from Philadelphia. That's something that you talk about a lot. Maybe we should start, you know, back in Philly. Where are you calling me from today, by the way?
Phoenix, because a couple months ago, I actually moved here. I moved to Phoenix. Yeah, I lived in the outskirts. I'm from like Northeast Philly, like the outskirts of Philly, my whole life. And then I just moved to Phoenix recently because I kind of wanted to be closer to LA without the expense.
Yeah.
And then also like the studios I work out of are out here. So I was flying back and forth a lot. A lot of my friends are out here like Asking Alexandria and Matt Good.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So it was kind of easier. And my manager lives out here. So it was easier to have a home base here. And it's a lot less expensive than Philadelphia.
Yeah, for sure.
In a lot of ways. So,
for sure. That's funny. Yeah, I asked you that because I was looking at your tour dates and I saw, you know, basically you just wrapped up like going around the whole country. And then I see this like random week off where you play like Texas and then you have some days off in Arizona. I'm like, what's she doing for a week? But now it all makes sense because you live
there. Yeah, sending here because I live here. So we were like, let's have it on a weekend.
It works. You know, totally makes sense. So, okay. But back to the Philly days, growing up there, what was it like for you? You know, did you have, you know, a classic kind of upbringing with two parents and brothers and sisters? What was it like growing up there in Philadelphia?
I did. I mean, I have, my mom and dad have been together my whole life and I have a younger brother. And I mean, it just, there's a lot of art and history in Philadelphia. So, I mean, that's really kind of what kickstarted it for me. None of my parents or family members are musical in any way, but just Philly itself is really artistic. Mm-hmm. And like, I really was getting into spoken word and I was getting into, cause that's massive in Philadelphia, spoken word and slam poetry.
Yeah.
And I was just really into poetry and I remember just writing that a lot and I was writing everything a cappella. So it was quite a transition because I wasn't used to any kind of instrumentals. I was just doing this all a cappella. But again, I was on the outskirts, so I didn't really have too many people to practice with unless I went right into Philadelphia. And that's how I got my start, going right into Philly for all the studios there and everything. Because I grew up in a similar town as Pink. I don't know. You know, Pink went to the same high school as me.
Oh. So, what's the name of the city or town or village?
She's from Doylestown, but we're both from Bucks County. So that's right on the outskirts, like the cusp of Philadelphia.
Right. No, I'm a suburb kid too. So I kind of know. Yeah, Doylestown, what is like, cool, is like a half an hour from Philadelphia kind of thing?
Right. Yeah. Well, Doylestown might be a little farther. I'm a little closer to Philly. And then, you know, I got my start. My first shows ever were in Philly, my first recording. So I was like there constantly. So yeah, that's definitely what I claim. You know, I'm always repping Philadelphia, even though I'm from right outside. So it's, but that's kickstarted me. Philly kickstarted me. And everything I've done and recorded was there, you know, up until my most recent stuff.
Sure.
With
it's funny, you know, I have a lot of, you know, kids that'll come up and show me like, hey, I wrote these lyrics and, you know, and I'm always like, yeah, these are like good lyrics. And I'm like, do you have a band? They're like, oh, I can't play anything. And I like, I don't have I'm like, well, get a guitar, you know, or figure something out. Or it's like, you're almost the opposite of that. Like you just wrote some words down and you worked on your craft and you made it work either with using other people or just figuring it out yourself with a computer, which is like kind of the new approach. And I think it's really viable and you've made it work. Am I accurate in kind of describing how you sort of got your music off the ground, at least originally?
Yeah, you're right. Because I mean, if you're usually right in the city with rap where it's bigger right there, like in the heart of Philly and stuff like that, they had people to freestyle with on the corners and this and that. And
right.
I just kind of was interested in it. And I did poetry, and that's spoken word is different than rap in the sense that rap follows more of a rhythm, and spoken poetry, you can take these pauses and it's more abstract. So it took me a second to kind of transition. I knew I liked music and I wanted to do music and have it somehow transition into me making songs rather than just free verses that I was just like abstractly, like, I don't know if abstractly is the word, but we just made it one. That I was just kind of freestyling stuff. And I had no one kind of there around me to like make me better. So it took me a second to really transition it and start meeting other musicians that were indie or underground musicians.
Right.
Because too, at the time, like back in the MySpace days, it started to become easier to find other musicians and easier to find like beats and stuff. I didn't even know you could like, I had no idea you could go online and just find like beats with no vocals and I could practice on that.
Yeah.
I had no clue. So I was doing everything a cappella, and then I paid for studio time and went to a studio and I was like, oh, I have a rhyme book full of all these poems and stuff. This is going to be easy. I've been doing spoken word for, you know, a long time and I can make this work. But I got my ass kicked because I tried to put it on instrumentals and I hadn't written any of the stuff to those instrumentals,
right.
You know? So I go in there thinking, oh, this is going to be easy. I'll just be able to lay something over a beat. It's not like that. You have to usually be listening to the tempo and everything. And I just had written stuff down, and then you have lines that are longer than other lines. You're trying to fit all these syllables in where it doesn't fit.
Yep.
And you start to learn, okay, I got to ride the instrumental. Now I'm working with something else. It's not just about the vocals and lyrics. Now there's another element that they gotta complement each other. You can't, you know, just throw anything on there. So that was the transition. So it was a little rough. I know my first couple songs, they probably sounded more like me talking over the beat than actually, you know.
This is not news to anybody, any musicians out there. Everyone's first shot at recording anything is terrible. Like, I mean, I can't think of a single example. Like, I mean, maybe like some of the Beatles guys, like their first bands were probably pretty good, you know? But maybe the first Rage Against the Machine record is very good. I from what I understand, like the demos that they did, but hey, you know, whatever. that's crazy. You know, and I wanted to ask you, you know, you've aligned yourself now with punk and hardcore, obviously like making, you know, records with Matt, you know, you mentioned Matt Good from First to Last, and Ben of Asking Alexandria, and now on Tragic Hero Records, which is, you know, known to be a metal hardcore punk label. Was that something growing up that you were into as well, like the Philadelphia punk scene?
I was definitely into pop punk. I can't say that I knew many bands that were local. I just was into like Sum 41, you know, Blink 182.
See, Sum 41 kind of was thing, local so. For me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
there
that's funny.
Go.
Yeah.
Those guys before they were probably popular. And
I kind of knew them. They were weird. They were a band. Sorry to go off on a little of a tangent here, but they were like big right away. Like they were like a famous local band almost. Like they were doing all this cool stuff, which at the time was actually pretty groundbreaking. I know now it would just sound ridiculous, but like they used to do. Well, they had these trampolines on stage, like these mini trampolines, which was like pretty cool. And then they'd also do these like sort of like dance moves where they would like point their guitars in certain directions. And they really like put on a show, which for a local band that most of us could barely play our songs, let alone think about what we were going to do for like the actual entertainment aspect. They like got that like right away. And then they were always like, I never saw them playing like hall shows or whatever. I always saw them playing like opening for like bigger bands that came through town. So they were always on like a higher level, you know, But
that's wild.
But when they got signed to, you know, major label, and they were on, like, you know, well, we, in Canada we have Much Music, which is, you know, kind of like our version of MTV. When that all happened to them, I was like, I knew it was going to happen because they just were better than everyone else, you know.
So. Yeah, well, I think, yeah, and I think, you know, listening to pop punk and stuff, I didn't believe that I was going to incorporate that into my sound necessarily, but I was definitely inspired by the performance aspect, like you were just saying. Like,
oh, yeah.
I liked the fact that, I like to think, even with me, if you watched one of my shows on mute, you would think that I'm a rock artist just because I like to mosh and crowd surf, and I really utilize the entire stage. So it's, I liked that aspect of it. So I think that's how it started to become incorporated, because I was like, you know, I just don't want to be one of those rappers standing in the same spot, just rapping over my full track.
Oh, yeah. I want to ask you about that. That's amazing. But right. Go on.
Yeah. And then I started, I mean, there are times, and on this last tour, I just used like, a backing tracks of me. So I didn't use live instrumentals, but there are times that I do. I'll use full band. There are tours that I've used just drums and DJ. And then, so I can switch it around. So I like that aspect, because I can kind of be a chameleon with it.
Yeah.
And use what I need to use. But I do like having, you know, the instruments on stage with me, because the energy is just so big in comparison, and having the drums up there, you really, really feel it. And I think, it's an important thing, and I just, yeah, I think that gets lost sometimes now.
No, totally. And I'm not really a rap guy at all, but I remember I was dating a girl that lived in Detroit, and her friend was like the morning radio host on like one of those like pop radio stations. So we were able to go to this event, and it was like at some sports bar. Like it was pretty big. There was probably like 700 or 800 people there. So like for like a sports bar, it was like a big, you know, kind of event. And it was Flo Rida and Teo Cruz, you know, the I put my hands up in the air sometimes, that guy. And they went, you know, they performed and whatever. They like went on super late, and I was like expecting that, but I couldn't believe that they literally just played their CD verbatim. Like the vocals weren't even taken out. Like the vocals were in there, and they literally just turned their microphone up over their CD, but you could still hear their vocals on the tracks, and they just performed like that. Like Flo Rida, is like a pretty serious artist. Like this wasn't like way long ago. Like he was huge. I couldn't believe, how is that okay?
But I've never seen him perform. And I mean, I guess when you have a hit song, it doesn't matter, as long as you're, it's more of an appearance than even a performance.
Right.
Because it's like,
okay. Yeah. Okay.
You know, and so it's like, I think the kids that are there or whatever, or you said it was a bar. I don't know how many kids are there, but like people are just happy to see him in person, and they kind of forget about the fact that they're not even really performing. And it's funny because now like you're almost expected to kind of do that. Cause now it's like, oh, she was kind of breathy and blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, I'm rapping everything in person. Like, and moving around. So it's kind of like, if they don't hear it, sometimes the fans don't hear it, how it is on the CD, they're like, why was it like this? Or why was it like, it's like, well, we're performing everything live, and you know, there's going to be some breaths that you hear. There's going to be some things like that. But now with everything, even it blew my mind being more introduced in the last year or two to the band world, how many things are backtracked in the band world too.
Well, yeah, so, you're not wrong.
And I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all. Like I didn't even know they were being fed click. Like I had no idea about bands, you know?
Oh,
what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, you hear the click in your ear. That's, you know, that's cool and everything, but also all the instruments, they could stop playing and it's still playing, you know? And I'm like,
yeah, sometimes
that blew my mind. And I'm not saying for all of them, you know what I mean? But
well,
I was just like, okay, that, but it's almost expected probably of bands now, because if you don't sound perfect, now that they're getting to the point where so many bands are doing it, so they expect that level of perfection, and not realizing that it's mostly on a track. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I guess maybe Flo Rida's just being honest.
I don't know.
But
yeah.
Another one too, I saw one time, it was, I was in Las Vegas on New Year's, and it was like, you know, when you watch like New Year's on TV, it's like, usually they show like the New York one or whatever, where I live, they show the Toronto one. But I guess they're all regional. So I was in Vegas, but I was like feeling sick. So well, it's Vegas. And, I was watching like the Vegas version, and they had Sean Kingston, and he was doing the same thing as Flo Rida, except he wasn't even trying. And he was just like sort of like lip syncing for a minute, and then he just didn't care. And then he was just dancing, and then he just like swore on TV. And I was like, man, that guy, like, that's fucking punk. Like, he doesn't, that guy doesn't care at all. Like, you say what you want about rock bands or rap or whatever, and like how rock's more real, or, but I mean, that guy did, could just, he couldn't have given a fuck, you know? And it's a huge stage, like, he knows. And he didn't care at all. And I just, like, I don't know, these whole differences in this world, and something I don't get to talk to someone else about very often. And it, I find that stuff very intriguing.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get it. I guess you get to a level where you're like, hey, it's a hit song regardless if I perform it well. I don't know what it is. You're like, the audience is going to sing it, so I don't have to sing it, kind of thing. I don't know what is going through your mind at that point, but it's like, with me, I get, you definitely, and I'm not trying, it's not like woe is me or whatever, but when you have a different image to hip hop or whatever, you have a lot to prove. And it's like, I couldn't just go up and do that and get away with it. Like, I'd hear a lot of backlash. So, and I prefer not to. I'd rather actually do it live. I prefer to do it live. I think it would be harder to match a track. Like, I think it would sound cluttered, because I leave a lot of my choruses in because of the fact they're really stacked, and there's like, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of vocals or harmonies or whatever. So I try to leave different parts that I can't do all of it live, you know, but yep. my verses aren't there. So I'm doing that all live, and it takes a lot of practice to really get it and get the breath control and be doing it while jumping around. So I just take a lot of pride in that. So when you do see other musicians much, much, much bigger than you, and they're just basically hitting their ad libs or backup vocals and not even doing their mains and just kind of clowning around, it's like, oh man, it's kind of a bruise to the
right. You know. No, totally. Me and Whitney will be right back. Here's a quick word from our sponsor. Did you know 66% of men lose their hair by age 35? The thing is once you start to notice the hair loss, it's already too late. It's much easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you've lost. Is it starting to move backwards? Are there bald spots? And why do guys turn to solutions, unproven solutions, when they can turn to medicine and science? But there's a solution. 4hims.com. A one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, sexual wellness, and just for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. We're talking about well-known equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. This isn't snake oil pills or back gas station counter supplements. These are real prescription solutions backed by science. It's easy. Go to 4hims.com. Answer a few questions, a doctor will review it and prescribe it to you. There's no waiting room, there's no awkward doctor visits, and the products are shipped directly to your door. But here's the thing. If you order now, my listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See the website for details. This would cost hundreds if you went to a doctor or a pharmacy. So go to 4hims.com/LSS. That's F-O-R-H-I-M-S. .com/LSS. 4hims.com/LSS, and do something about that hair. Well, you just wrapped up was it your first headline tour?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I've done headlining spot dates and routed shows to and from other tours where I was supporting, but for the most part, it was my first national headlining tour.
That's awesome. Congratulations on that. I guess you haven't wrapped it up yet. You still have a couple more dates. They're next weekend. So I don't know if this will be out, but if the dates are still up, everyone go see Whitney. But, you know, I feel like you did it right. You started, you know, in Philly in your hometown, and you sort of branched out and you kind of grew your radius, you know, slowly, and now you're doing, you know, a national tour. But you've mentioned, you know, in other interviews and stuff, that it hasn't been so easy for you, either being taken seriously, you know, you mentioned your image a couple times. Talk to me a little bit about that, like when you started seeing some success and how hard it was to kind of continue that and push along.
Yeah, I mean, I think now is a good time because I think we're in an era where female-fronted bands and just female artists in general are starting to be a little more celebrated and taken seriously, especially, like, as I just said earlier, in hip-hop, it's everyone's trying to look really hard and really, you know, they don't want to look like they have emotions or they're soft or whatever. So in a list, if you're going to ask someone, who are your top five, you know, favorite MCs or favorite artists, they're not usually going to list a woman because that doesn't make them look hard. I mean, that just, so to be up there, usually it's like, this is my favorite female. Like that's usually, and people say that to you and I take it, you know, I still take it as a compliment because I know they're trying to compliment me, but a lot of times they'll come up and be like, you're my favorite female rapper. And it's just kind of like, man, you can't just say like one of my favorite rappers or something like that. It's always like the female things in there.
Right.
And then you're always being compared to other female artists, whether they're similar to you or not. Like I could, they'll name a female artist and I could name probably 10 male artists that I'm closer to than that artist, right. You know, but that's a continuous thing. So as far as, yeah, being taken seriously, as far as both a woman or someone who doesn't look like the average stereotype of what a hip hop artist should look like, that's kind of been the struggle. But I think now as so many genres are starting to fuse and it's blurry, the lines between genres are just kind of blurred now, which I think is an amazing thing.
Totally.
Cause we label things too much and categorize it too hard. And I think as that's starting to kind of disappear, it's becoming easier and easier. But of course, when I first started out, there wasn't even like Iggy Azalea or even like Kesha yet or anything
sure.
And I'm not saying I'm similar to them, but that was, there wasn't even any of that yet. So it was very like left field and people were kind of like, well, what are you going to sound like? What are you going to rap about? Like, what kind of things do you have to rap about? As if I had to rap about, you know, guns or violence or whatever. And that's not the case. I've obviously proved it with you know, relationship songs and stuff like that, but it's not what people expect to hear. So, as far as being taken seriously too, I mean, I know I have songs like Whoopty Woo Woo or songs like, I have a song called I Hate My Roommate, which is supposed to be funny and quirky and dumb. And sometimes they make those songs on purpose and then people are like, oh, I can't take her seriously. Do you think I'm trying to be taken seriously with that song? So there are certain songs that I do want you to take seriously and they're deeper. And then there's certain songs that are just supposed to be what they are, just quirky and fun and dumb. They're not supposed to be overly technical on people. I'm sure as a rock artist, like not everything has to be technical and showing off. Sometimes the best riffs and everything are so simple. And it's more so how the song makes you feel than whether, you know, the person is showing off their skill or not. It's just really the timeless songs are the ones that make you feel some type of way.
No, you know what I mean? Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, my question wasn't about you being a woman at all.
I'm sorry.
I mean, it's fine. I hope people weren't, you know, I hope you didn't think my question was trying to point at that, you know, weren't taking seriously because you're a woman. That wasn't my question at all, but it is true. You are a woman and you're a woman in hip hop, which is very male dominated. And I mean, I guess I'll ask you this question.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. do you think that rap is the most misogynistic genre of music, or do you think in some ways rock is worse?
Oh man. I don't know. I think it could be just the entertainment industry overall. And I know your initial question. Yeah, I know it wasn't gender.
I mean,
gender, but that is one of the reasons I think that, you know, I'm not taken seriously. That could be one of the reasons, one of, you know, a couple, but yeah, I think, I mean, hip hop, definitely the overall theme of hip hop is pretty sexist. There's a lot of sexist like subject matter in a lot of people's lyrics. And kind of objectifying women. Overall, like hip hop or not, though, I've gone on tour and I've had like, for instance, I toured with front of house, a member of my crew was the front of house and it was a woman. And so going into different venues and stuff, talking to the sound guy there, I don't think she would be taken seriously until she starts dropping all these terms that indicate she knows what she's talking about. So, and those sound guys aren't necessarily in hip hop. They're just in the entertainment world. So they're like, oh, this girl doesn't know how to run sound or anything. And then she starts dropping some knowledge and it's like, oh, okay, never mind. You probably know what you're talking about. So I just think overall in entertainment, it's kind of it's kind of tough because, you know, being male dominated, they just probably don't come across a lot of women who do this kind of thing. So, I mean, yeah, they're just not used to coming across it, but that doesn't mean that they don't know what they're doing. So,
you hear the stories all the time about women going in to a show, like performing, and someone being like, "Oh, you know, where's your boyfriend?" or venue people asking to see your laminate, and then when they and not the other, like, you know, men. And I hear those stories all the time. And as a male performer, fuck, I don't even wear my laminate. I usually lose it in the first couple of days and don't even have it the whole tour. You know what I mean? So hearing those stories, it's like, it's kind of eye opening that the struggle is real. Pardon the you know, shitty millennial quote, but like,
I've had that happen.
Have you had those experiences? Are there any stories you can share?
And you know what? I'm not even trying to sound, woe is me, I'm a woman, because sometimes it's other women who do these things. Because I was backstage, about to go on stage. I had my microphone in my hand, you know, so I'm about to go on stage. And this girl that was there, and I'm not sure who she was or if she worked for the venue or what, but she was backstage, and she goes, "Oh, are you one of the band guy's girlfriends?" And I was like, "No, I'm on the tour." And she's like, "Oh, so you sell merch."
Oh, wow.
Because I said I'm on the tour, so she goes, "Oh, so you sell merch?"
Jeez.
And I'm like, and then I go on stage, of course, like my intro starts, and I go on stage, and I think she was probably like, "Oh, shoot," you know. But I mean, and that was a woman talking to me.
Yeah.
So it's not all guys that make these assumptions. Sometimes other women, they're not used to seeing it either, so they start to assume that you're one of the guy's girlfriends, or you work merch, or you must, I don't know what it is.
No, absolutely. Well, one thing that's kind of crazy about you and your career so far is just the diversity of other artists you've toured with. I have a little list here I'm going to share. I know you know you've toured with all these people, but we've got Asking Alexandria, 3-6 Mafia, Twisted, Cottonmouth Kings, Johnny Craig, Blood on the Dance Floor, Jelly Roll, I don't know who that is, Asking Alexandria, did I already say that? And you have upcoming festivals with Tool and Alice in Chains, and you're doing a Warped Tour date. So you've got a lot of stuff, you know, in the past and coming up. You must have some of the craziest stories. And how do you get hooked up with all these different artists? I guess it keeps it interesting.
Like we were saying earlier, it's hard to place me. So it's just like I end up on really random things, and luckily I can adapt to whatever I'm going to do. Like when I opened for Asking, I used a full band. When I opened for 3-6 Mafia, I used a DJ, you know, so
yeah.
I can adapt, and I'll choose the songs out of my catalog that fit best with that act. You know what I mean? So
sure.
I can make it work. But it's always been like, we don't know exactly who you fit with. There's no other artist really exactly like you. So it's hard to place me on a tour. Like the booking agent is like, "We really like you and believe in you," which is cool to have people around me that believe in me, but they also have a hard time being able to match me up with other artists just because it's so different. So I've been able to do all these things, and all of these acts are so different from each other, and what the tour experiences are like are so different from each other. So it is really crazy. So I feel like I've learned a lot and been through a lot and have a lot of experience and growth because of it, because I've just seen so like every aspect of the industry, I think. So it's been a wild ride.
Totally. Well, I see you did like a 60 date. Is it a 60 date tour with 3-6 Mafia you did?
Yep.
First of all, I love 3-6 Mafia. Like I would totally like fanboy so hard over them. Like I love them. What was
They're amazing.
Yeah. Like that's a legendary band. That's been doing it forever. Like When the Smoke Clears is one of my favorite hip hop records, like ever. What is it like going into a situation where there's a band like that and you have to just kind of be like, "Oh, hi," you know, like, is that nerve wracking for you?
Yeah, but I already knew Gangsta Boo, which is the female in the band. Like I already had a song out with Gangsta Boo. I'd already talked to her and hung out with her several times. So she's one of the reasons that I was able to be on that tour. I mean, I was already approached regarding it, but then when they ran me past the band, Gangsta Boo already knew who I was. So that kind of solidified me being one of their supporting acts, you know what I mean? So I didn't know everyone else. So I was meeting, you know, DJ Paul, I didn't know, and Crunchy Black and Koopsta and all these guys I hadn't met before. So it was definitely an experience meeting them, and it was really cool. But you really get to know people throughout a 60-day tour.
Yeah, so that's a long one.
You know, you get comfortable and everyone knows each other's routine and everything like that. I was on a different bus than them. So they had their own bus that we called the Beverly Hills bus.
And then why did you call it that?
Well, because they had the nice bus and then we were on the bus that was like the Compton bus. You know what I'm saying? So like they were in like the Beverly Hills bus and then all the supporting acts were in our own bus and there was just so many of us in there. And it was like the Compton bus, you know? So, but we had a lot happen to us on that tour and it was just wild every night. We had a lot of shows get shut down due to fights and everything because 3-6 really riles people up. I mean, there's like mosh pits and people like every time the show cleared out, there'd be at least 3 shoes on the floor, blood, like beer. Like it was like crazy. The aftermath of what the club looked like afterwards. But you know, a few of them had to get shut down. In Denver, we had tear gas thrown into the venue.
Oh my goodness.
So show over after that. But yeah, it was, they couldn't get to the mosh pit. They couldn't get to the center where people were fighting. So all of a sudden you just see tear gas get thrown in and then you just couldn't breathe anymore. So the set was just cut and it's just like, it was insane. It was, I was like, this is chaos, but in the best way possible, because it was just it, like seeing people's reactions to 3-6 and being so excited to hear songs that were just classics and seeing them all together. Cause that was like really their first tour.
Yeah.
They had done so many like award shows and big things before, but they were just like, it was really their first kind of like all together doing a full tour and people were stoked.
Yeah. Oh man. I wish I'd seen it. That's crazy. And another one too, just to really, you know, change directions here is Twisted. And, you know, I don't know if everyone listening knows what Twisted is, but it's kind of like a side project of oh my God, a biggest brain fart
Insane
ever.
Insane Clown Posse?
Insane Clown Posse.
Well, they're their own group.
They are their own group, but they're very aligned. Yeah. They're very aligned with them. Oh, I thought there were some similar members or someone's cousin or something, but I don't know.
No, they're two separate guys.
Okay, I know you know.
Insane Clown Posse.
I know you know. And
but the same genre.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know you've played tons of stuff with them and some collaborations, and you've also played The Gathering of the Juggalos.
Yeah.
Tell me about that, because that is what I'm really intrigued about.
When I first started rapping, I actually didn't know what Juggalos were. So it's like, I just remember one of my first shows, and it was actually in, you're in a touring band, so I'm sure you know, it was Croc Rock in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I know it very well.
It doesn't exist anymore, I don't think.
Oh, really? I feel like I was just there
sure
a couple years ago.
Down.
Okay.
Yeah, within the last couple of years.
They had good pizza, really good pizza there.
They did. But that was one of my first venues. Being like right outside of Philly, I would play Philly a lot, and then I would play in the Lehigh Valley a lot. So I remember when like press kits were still physical press kits and you weren't sending like EPKs to people. You're actually like physically had like press kits in an envelope and printed out like shows you have done and like pictures and stuff. I like went into Croc Rock and I was like had a press kit and I was super like young teenager and I was just like, hey, I really want to play a show here, like I rap and stuff, and they're looking at me like, yeah, okay. But they were like, all right, well, we have a show tomorrow with ABK, who was a person also signed to Insane Clown Posse's label, you know, and I was like, and I didn't know who that was, but I just knew he was a rapper. I was like, okay, cool. I was like, I'll play. They're like, you can play right when doors open, like you're going to go right on. And I'm like, okay, cool. And I just thought, I'm making it. I have a show, like I'm killing it, you know? So I was so excited. And then I show up for the show and I go on stage and everyone has painted faces. And I was like, what? Like, I thought it looked like a Kiss concert or like,
I had
no idea what was going on. Yeah. So in my mind, I was like, this is either going to be really bad or, you know, or they're going to love it. I have no idea. I can't tell. So, but I rapped and they were really into it. They Juggalos were one of the first fan bases that super embrace me. And I think it's just because they're used to things that are different and they embrace things that are different.
Yeah.
And that not the mainstream doesn't always gravitate towards, and they appreciate it regardless, as long as they can relate to what you're saying and everything. And even though I clearly, you know, I didn't have a painted face or rap about, they're used to like a hardcore genre, and I don't really do that, but they can tell that I'm being myself and they appreciate that. So it went over really, really well. And then since then, I was just invited to play all these Juggalo things. So it's been something that I've been able to do throughout my whole career is go back and play Juggalo related shows whenever and have great reactions, and the fans are awesome.
I've heard that from other people too.
They're great. They're really awesome. I mean, they look menacing. Like, to other people, they're like, oh, that looks really scary. But for the most part, they're just like really like comic book nerds and just people who are just always felt like an outcast kind of thing. So it's always been really good for me. I can see how other people come in not knowing what's going on and they might have a great time. But for me, it was awesome. And the Gathering, everyone should go to that at least one time because it is insane.
Yeah, I've just heard the rumors about it. I don't know much about it, but I've heard it's like, it's just in total insanity.
It is. They're shooting fireworks during people's sets. It's like, I don't know, indescribable. So
right.
It's just like, and I was made to think that I was going to do poorly at the Gathering because of the fact, I don't know if you heard about Fila Tequila playing the Gathering.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think I heard.
Well, there was, do you know who Tila Tequila is?
Yes, I do. Yes, okay. I do. I remember, was it a shot of love or whatever?
Yeah.
And she was like on MySpace, and then they brought out the people, and it was like, I'm bisexual, and it's like half girls and half guys. God. I remember the whole thing.
Well, she raps too. I don't know if she still does or what's going on with her, but she raps too. So for a second, she had like a rap career going on. So they brought her out to the Gathering, and we're talking several years ago. This isn't recent, but they brought her out several years ago, and people were just not excited about it because she's not really known to be a rapper. She just kind of, they felt it was fake. Okay. So Juggalos don't like that. They don't like something that seems mainstream and just not genuine. They like things they can relate to. And they just thought that she was coming out and making a joke of it. And they thought she was mocking them kind of thing. So they just threw things at her during her set. It just didn't end well. They were rioting. They were just not happy that she was there. She was not welcome there. And how she handled it, I think, was kind of poor because as she was on stage, I think she was just – she wasn't getting off. Like, she refused and was kind of antagonizing him a little bit. So after a few things got thrown, she was kind of aggressive about it, and then it just welcomed so much more. So – people were like, you know, as a girl rapper, you're going to get stuff thrown at you. They're going to do all this and that. So I went in thinking like, okay, this could be bad. Like, we don't know how this is going to go, but I don't want to just be scared to perform at places. Like, I don't want to let that run my career. I don't want to let that, you know, dictate what I do and don't do. So I was just like, I'm going to do it. I think I can handle it better. I think I've already been introduced into this world. They already know me, and I've done songs with a lot of artists they like. So I was like, we'll just see how it goes. And it was awesome. And it was a great reaction. No, so
I think
I just approached it differently.
Sure. And I think like Tila Tequila doing reality shows, like dating shows and stuff, like that is everything that they kind of hate. I mean, from what I know about that kind of vibe. So it totally makes sense. Do you ever have like random Juggalos coming out to your shows, like your headline shows, where it'll be like kind of everybody, and then there'll be like four or five dudes just like with their faces painted. That must be funny for your fans that don't realize, you know, that you're aligned with that. I guess everyone maybe does. I don't know.
They probably know. Yeah, because I've always been so eclectic. So I think the fans that come out are such a melting pot anyway. And generally they won't paint their faces coming out to my shows. I think it's probably because I don't paint my face. So you can tell though, because they're wearing all the gear, you know, and stuff like that. But it's like such a melting pot of fans that everyone's welcome. And I love that Juggalos have supported me throughout the years. And, you know, I don't know any of Tila Tequila's raps. She could be awesome. She maybe not, but I just think she just approached it the wrong way. And with me, it's just like, I've always said that everyone was welcome, because who am I to like say if a certain fan base can't be into me? Like, I'm the most random act ever, and I know how it feels to be told I can't do certain things or I don't fit into certain things. So any fan is welcome, of course. So I'm just grateful for them.
That's awesome. It's the last Warped Tour ever. Have you ever done? Sorry.
I was like, heck yeah, this is a good time to be on it, right?
This is the one, and you're playing the Phoenix date, which obviously makes sense now, looking at my notes, since you live there. Are you excited for that? Is that something do you care about that? Is it just kind of another show? Like, how do you approach that? Because from my perspective, it's going to be a big deal for these fans coming out, because people have been going to this, you know, it's the longest running festival ever, so people are going to come out and they're going to be very, you know, I think emotional that it's over.
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to get on Warped Tour for years. So this is not just like another show. To me, it's on my bucket list. Yeah. So was South by Southwest, and we just played that.
Oh, yes, I was going to ask you about that.
So it's like certain things that you always hear about is Warped Tour, South by Southwest, like all these things. All of these were on my bucket list, and there's a good chance I'm playing more than just the Phoenix date. We're still working on a couple things here, but I understand how it is tougher this year because so many bands, I'm sure, want to play the farewell, you know, last Warped Tour. So I see how it is. It is a little tougher for bands to be on the full tour rather than, you know, just a couple of dates, but we're pushing him. It's likely we're going to be on a couple more, but it's going to be awesome for me. The only thing I'm worried about is I know it's going to be like 125 degrees.
Oh yeah. It's horrible in Phoenix. It's like, it's just awful.
I know. So I think that's my only thing, because I'm like, I have a really energetic stage performance. So I'm really hoping that it's going to go over as well. Like, I'm going to be able to do it, and also the fans are going to be able to participate, because I don't want anyone passing out. That's the thing.
Well, you got about 25 minutes to get through. That's the good part. So
I know you've done it a million times too. So
yeah. No,
I'm looking at you for,
oh yeah, no,
for
like
all the help.
No, like Phoenix and Vegas are always like the two worst shows. And like, you know, you're not going to get like a random cold day in Phoenix. Like, that doesn't happen.
No.
You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, maybe it'll be a cloudy day. Like, does that happen? I don't even know if that happens, but
it's rare. It's either raining like a monsoon, or it's just really hot.
Yeah.
And sometimes both.
Rain would be, you never want to hope for rain at Warped Tour, but maybe that show. How was South By? Because South By Southwest, from what I understand, has changed over the last few years. How was your experience? What did you get up to there?
I mean, this was my first one, so I have no idea what to compare it to. But as far as, like, I almost feel like I would have preferred to just be performing in the streets, because everyone's in the streets. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, nothing against, obviously, the bars and venues get popping. When I performed, it was a little earlier in the day. It wasn't like at night, later at night, where, you know, there's a million people in the bars yet. So with my experience, I'm mostly like, I was playing to the people inside, but then I'd also walk out in the street, because I have a really good wireless mic. So I'd be walking out in the street, rapping down the street and stuff, and everyone was stopping and taking pictures, and it was great. So it was cool. I also did a rooftop show where I started like hanging off of the fire escape, and they didn't really appreciate that too much, because I'm nuts and I hang off of stuff and drop off of stuff and like climb trusses and all this the kind of thing. But I started hanging off of this second story fire escape, and people in the streets are all filming and whatnot, but then everyone's yelling at me like, get off of that, you know?
Yeah.
So, but no regrets. It was fun. It was really cool.
No, totally. Like a lot of the complaints, you know, artists say about it is that it's like not, it's not artist friendly in the way that there aren't really like fans there. A lot of it's just kind of like suits and industry people that are kind of just more there to like, you know, get drunk off free beer. You know what I mean? than actually like, you know, check out new artists and stuff.
I could see that. I could definitely see that. But that's why, yeah, you start performing to the people out in the street, and
there you go.
You get some legit fans
there
from it.
Go.
And it was
I
just an
that.
Experience too. Because then when you're not performing, there's a lot of networking opportunities.
Totally.
There's a lot of other bands for you to find that you like. So
yeah. It
was, aside from the actual performance, I kind of knew that's what it was going to be. I knew, hey, I'm going to this for the experience and also to network with other bands and check everything out. And rather than, I think I'm going to gain a million fans and sell a lot of merch, that wasn't like what I thought going into. So,
oh yeah,
you know.
Totally.
So it was cool.
Cool. Well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I want to ask you about a couple things. One of them is all about Bullies Big and Small, which is, for those of you that don't know, is the Grammy Award winning children's album, which came out a few years back, which Whitney is a part of.
Yes.
And it's a compilation album that has, I don't know, quite a few different tracks kind of geared towards kids dealing with, I guess, dealing with bullies and dealing with, you know, children's issues. And it won, you know, best Grammy. Sorry, won a Grammy Award. That's pretty crazy. And that was very early in your career. What was that like for you at having that happen at the time?
I mean, yeah, the album won the Grammy. So all of us involved, I mean, we're involved in the album that won the Grammy. But it's like, it was so weird because I didn't even know it was going to be submitted to it. You know, I was just kind of asked by a bunch of producers who were in Pennsylvania that were like, hey, can you rap on this children's album? And at first I was like, no, because I mean, most of my music I make is like college kids and not geared towards children. Like I curse in my songs and stuff. So I didn't want to like make people think that I was a children's artist. But they were like, hey, it's going to charity. It's just like a side project kind of thing. You don't have to do your normal music like that. You could just make sure, obviously, you don't curse in this and make it to kids in like elementary school kind of thing. And I was like, okay, I can do that. Like, I understand. Like, I like being given challenges and, you know, to do something that I don't normally do. So that's cool. So I did that. And then, yeah, later it was submitted and got the nomination for Best Children's Album of the Year. And we were up against the Muppets, like, soundtrack.
Yeah.
And Disney and all this. And I was like, okay, there is just no way we're going to win this because everyone involved on the album was independent. Like, no one was signed to a label. It was just so DIY, which is cool, which is, like, I love that. And we all did it for free. No one made any money. It was just all going to charity. But we flew out to the Grammy Awards. So,
oh, cool.
We were at the Staples Center. So I was there. And you can look it up, I'm sure, on like YouTube. If you look up like my name in Grammy Awards or something, I'm sure you could see it because it was OK Go that announced the Grammy. So OK Go announced us. And they said the album title. I was like, what? Like we just, you know, with Disney and everyone else being – everything else being out that year, it was just really shocking. And it was really cool for independent music to prove that that could happen on the level that we were on. So regardless of it being a genre I don't normally do, it was definitely amazing. The only thing that got weird is then I went out on tour with 3 Six Mafia not long after, so that when people were looking at my name, when people were like 3 Six Mafia fans, but they were looking at my name, it was like children's album, blah, blah, blah. So it was like,
how you feeling with this 9mm to your grill?
Just yeah, it was like so
got a little conflicting ideas there a little bit.
Right. So I think that made it really crazy. People are looking up my name. They're seeing that. It was weird. So, but hey, I'm grateful for it. I'm glad that it happened. I got to experience that. It's awesome.
And it's a great message too. You know, that's what struck me when I was looking it up. It's like, that's something that's was obviously important. You know, in 2011 was important when I was a kid and is even more important today. So I think it's, you know, the whole idea of bullying and everything is really important. So I think it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for
it. Hopefully there will be many more Grammys for you in the future. And yeah, I'm not kidding. You never know. So
next it'll be for something like polka or something, and I'll be like, how did I get this?
Exactly. Well, I always like look, and this is like kind of shitty of me to say this because there are legitimate artists in every genre that gets nominated for the Grammys, but sometimes you look at the lists and you're like, I'm trying to think of some of the categories, but like, I don't know, you'll look at some category and be like, really? Like, were there even 5 albums that came out in that genre this year? Because I didn't hear about any. <You know? laughs> And like one of the records I think that won Grammy, like for something, it you know, it sold like 250 copies or something. You know, like
yeah,
it's just really
because
it's really interesting somehow sometimes how like, you know, it's like there was that Olympian, I think, that didn't actually know how to ski. Did you hear about this?
Yes, it was snowboard, I thought. Was it ski or snowboard?
I was one of the two. Yeah, and they ended up qualifying just by going to all the events that didn't have like enough people in it. So I feel like that's what you got to do, is just make an album in every genre and maybe you'll get a Grammy.
Yeah, cuz people don't realize there's like 100 categories, but they only televised like what, 20? You know what I mean? Because that would be the longest televised event ever.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of categories that people don't know or hear about that happen. They're just not televised, you know?
No. And they aren't even televising the rock ones anymore now.
That's sad.
Yeah. I think Avenged Sevenfold like boycotted it this year because of that or whatever. So
that's wild.
Yeah, it is kind of. It's kind of weird, you know, considering you'd think rock would be kind of an important. Maybe it's not rock, maybe it's just metal or something, but you'd think they'd be important, but I guess no one cares. So that's okay.
That's crazy.
Anyways, I'll let you go, but what's coming up next? I know you have this Northern Invasion Festival with Tool and Alice in Chains, a couple other dates. What can people check out?
Yeah, there's a good chance I'm going to be doing a second leg of this headlining tour because I have a bunch of festival dates announced. So I'm going to be doing also headlining shows in between those dates. And then also I'm releasing a song bi-weekly now through the summer. So I already have two different ones out, but I'm releasing like an album's worth of singles rather than just an album all at once.
Cool.
Everyone's really into streaming and Spotify, obviously. So I'm keeping up with this by, you know, spreading out the singles so they can look forward to that. One just dropped this last Friday, and then every other Friday I'm having something drop now through the whole summer. So
that's so sick.
Something.
That's
yeah,
great. That's amazing for your fans. I wish my favorite artists would do that. That's that's incredible. Cool. Okay. Well, I always play music on this podcast. I'd love to leave the people with a tune. Is there something I should play? Like one of your, you know, maybe a newer track, maybe something that you think would be good for people that haven't heard you before?
Yeah.
Sorry to put you on the spot.
Oh no, that's cool. I could rap on the spot. I don't know. Should I go out rapping?
Go out rapping.
All right. Let's see. I'm on this podcast speaking odd facts. I know I'm different, but some other rappers are beyond whack. I'm off the dome, not a written like a contract. I know they see me in their eyes like a contact. I've struggled, shit. Every day I'm hustling. I've played 10,000 people and the next day like 100. I've played to empty rooms and even still I'm fucking loving it. I've been cheered, booed, heard I was dope and heard I wasn't shit. I'm on the phone with Shane, so now I'm bubbling. My career is getting hotter. So today is like another win. I'm losing my voice. I hear it cracking. I get it cracking. I'm on tour. My vans be crashing, but I don't need them. I'm driven by this passion. Thank you, Shane. I appreciate
Woo!
It.
I'm clapping. That was sick.
I appreciate it.
Damn, you killed it. All right.
But you could go out with the song, going out with whatever you want. You could do Don't Lie to Me with Matt Good, but thank you for having me on the podcast.
Don't Lie to Me with Matt Good. Yeah, thank you for doing it, and have a great show, hometown show in Phoenix.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, and enjoy your summer, and look forward to all the new tunes.
All right,
thanks
so much.
Thanks, Whitney. Yeah, all the best.
Tell me something I don't know. Hope to God glad that you don't go, cause I'm still hitting up your phone, so please.
There is a tune from Whitney Payton, and we haven't had anybody freestyle on the show. That was super sick. Thank you, Whitney, so much for doing this. What a great episode. Thanks to her manager, Zach, for setting it up. Make sure you go out and see her on the road when she comes to your hometown. Sounds like she's going to be doing lots more stuff and probably with all kinds of different bands. Who'd have thought she'd have a Juggalo fan base? That is that is pretty awesome. I want to thank you guys again for tuning in. Next week, we will be back again with an all-new episode. Make sure you're subscribed. If you dig the show, feel free to write an iTunes review, preferably 5 stars. And also, I want to thank our sponsors, Rockabilia.com and 4hymns.com, a new sponsor. Make sure if you're a man and you're losing your hair or it's starting to fade away, go to 4hymns.com/LSS. Again, that $5, that's a hell of a deal. And that'll get you in the door, connect you with real doctors. So check that out. It's a good one. And I know this is going to be not what I do on this podcast to end the show, but I already played a Whitney Payton song. She already freestyled for us. And all this talk of 3-6 Mafia has just gotten me revved up. So I'm going to end the show with a little 666 Mafia. Crank this shit up. For me, it doesn't get any better. Thank you, everyone, so much for tuning in. Peace and love. And we'll see you next week.
Yeah, you old pussy-ass, cake-ass, punk-ass, trick-ass, suck-ass, fuck-ass,
dick-a-the-mouth,
boot-ass, KY jelly-packing ass, nigga, you better get your bitch ass up off the street, nigga. You got 5 seconds to get your hating ass up out here, because there's some trill-ass niggas in this motherfucker.
Yeah, nigga, y'all know the motherfucking scope. Y'all non-snorters, non-smokers, non-sippers. Get the fuck up out of here, bitch.
Nigga, it's some sipping-ass, pouring-up-ass, smoking-ass, getting high-ass niggas in here, 3-6. UGK, nigga, we putting it down in this motherfucker.
And we ain't playing with you. Y'all know the motherfuckers go home.
Now pull it up, nigga.
Dippin' on some scissors. Dippin' on some dippin' on some scissors. Dippin' on some dippin' on some scissors. Dippin' on some dippin' on some scissors.
Dippin'
on some dippin' on some scissors.
Dippin'
on some dippin' on some scissors. Dippin' on some dippin' on some scissors. Dippin' on some dippin' on some scissors.
Working the wheel, a pimp, not a simp. Keep the dope fiends higher than the Goodyear blimp. We eat so many shrimp. I got iodine hardening. Fuck niggas make me sick with all that pigeon and bargaining. You say that you a boss, I ain't believing that shit. You got the funny Geneva watch with the Ferrari kit. Take that monkey shit off, you embarrassing us. I got the red permissive scene, thick orange and yellow tux. Hypercoat down on the hands free phone. The 84 from on them blades 20 inch chrome. If you got 16, you can get a visor. I'm choking on that Doja Sweet and sipping on that scissor.
Some niggas scared to float it. Some niggas they want it. Some niggas they Jonah. But I be fucked up a phony. Roll with the mafia six. And we ain't about that bullshit. If we gon' get high, we gon' get high. And we gon' house a bitch. Two niggas all at the mouth. Niggas all at the ass, and plus there's some half a nigga dick hard all night, and she cool with that. She popped up a pill of X, then drank on some orange juice, and just when you thought she was freaking, she done got super loose. Niggas coming by threes and deuces, all in circles like Dr. Goose. All it wanted, can phone it. She on that X and that 2 to $40 for just 1 ounce plus.
the next is how it's pronounced. Niggas sipping and dipping and tripping, man, I'm about all out.
Sipping on some scissor, dipping on some dip, dipping on some scissor, dip, dipping on some dip, dipping on some scissor, dip, dipping on some dip, dipping on some scissor, dip, dipping on some dip.
People always asking me, Mr. 3-6 high on that, rolling on them X pills, stirring pop up powder packs. Something like keep me easy. Nothing like that yellow, yellow better. Hey, you're itching, man. Talking like, what's up, fool? Vocal cords sounding lame. In my days, all we did was cheap out on a quarter pound. Don't know coke, eyes are buck. This bitch should've knocked it down. Knock you out, make you fall asleep. When you're on them wheels, ain't no doubt. Hit me when I beat for this beat. Feel once again on my wicked high. Gotta have that drink. Yeah, my nigga, he know I feel like I'm gon' fuck.
Niggas pulling up in my Southern Credo. Quick, fast, we'll put it on your ass like John Vito. Cause you frontin' rap singers, be creamin' like a Zanga. You ain't from the manger, boy, but you gets the middle finger. Hung danger, rum drinker, occasionally take your bitch to the tilly and be a dick and come slanger. When Big Bun come danger, nigga, ring your alarm. Sexy thing on my arm, cup of drink in my palm. And that crazy shit, I'm trippin' on some skinny bitches. Something that's wholesome, Florida the Folsom. For the most, I'm steady sippin' on some.
Sippin' on some scissor. Dip, dippin' on some dip, dippin' on some scissor. Dip, dippin' on some dip, dippin' on some scissor. Dip, dippin' on some dip, dip.
I want to give a huge shout out to the following members of the All Access Club for being so supportive. I love you so much. Shout out to Brendan Potter, Rainer Ho, Philip Kazierski, Julia Papalka, straight out of Buffalo, Nate Riley from Albuquerque, Jessica Balasio, Phil Fradkin, Calgary's finest, Melissa Gilroy, Edmonton's finest, Brandon Drescher, Gabby Marshall from Canberra, Australia, Seth Powers, Mo Horta, Anton Appelrod, Robert Lewis, Ian Scott, Johnny Carreau, oh you sly dog, Caitlin Stevens, Cole Fenn, Evan Van Howe, Travis Reed, Aiden McLaughlin, Austin Beckman, Christina Springer out of Louisville, Drew McDonald, Roldan Kabate, Will Southard, Travis Hardy, Eric Layton, Tyler Burnworth, love that name, Derek Accurso, Nicholas Loveland, Brandon Dave, Trent McDougal, my boy out of TO, Rigel St. Pierre, my other boy out of Toronto, Josh Lowe, Windsor's finest, Rebecca Ferrero, Connor Lynch, Jeffrey Adams II, Thomas Mancini, Sarah Pauls, Andre Nielsen, Feek Kazmat, Victoria Varr out of Sweden, Brandon Ray, Markham King, Lisa Buckland, Roy Stino, Cameron Lopez, Austin Amos, Connor Larson, Mary Beth Badler, nice to have you, Mary Beth, Ford Wesson, Julia Casada, Alina Anglin, Christian Harris, Jesse Basso, and Megan Marr. Perth, Australia, that's far away. Thank you so much, everybody, for being the sweetest. Love you all. Peace and love. See you next time.